coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Hello, everybody.
Hey. What issue is this, Cole? I think it's 278.
I believe that you are correct.
It's either 278 or 279 tonight. I need to look and see. No, it's 279 tonight.
279, damn.
I believe it is 279. That is scary. That's horrifying to me that we've made it this far into the lexicon of this show, a show that was not supposed to last nearly this long. All bets against
This was going to be like a year or something like that.
A pet project.
279, yes, indeed.
Yeah, I forget who I was talking to. I was talking to somebody, and they were like, well, you know, I was asking somebody if they would want to be a guest, and they said, well, you know, I don't have a computer, so we would have to use our phone, so, you know, call quality could be an issue. And I said, you don't understand.
Well, it's that second word that doesn't necessarily always apply here.
Well, and that's what I said. I said, you know, there's this idea of what a successful podcast is, and Cole and I do everything in our power just to burn that to the ground.
That's right. We want to demystify podcasting by proving that any old hack can do it.
So much like we want to burn the idea of a good podcast to the ground, comic books have been burning to the ground good taste and the idea of a cultured society for a while now. And we thought, hey, we should probably talk about this in one issue, because what we've done for the past 279 is we kind of spread this out in a thin layer, like a crepe, across this podcast. We thought we would drag it all into the one and just have a real conversation in an episode that we have titled The No-Fly Zone. So, Cole, what is The No-Fly Zone about?
Well, The No-Fly Zone is we're actually breaking this into two, because the original concept, which every now and again Andrew gives me a reprieve from coming up with, like, the steady stream of conceptual things that fall out of my brain. It's not for lack of contribution. It's just occasionally he gets a word in edgewise and can,
right.
Can posit something of his own. And in this particular case, the concept is there are characters that have a rich history that have been around for decades, some nearly a century. Mm-hmm. Others are more recent additions, you know, to the comic book family, yet all of them, at least within the realm of the characters we're intending to talk about, share a common thread, and that is you would never, ever be able to go into the publisher and say, hey, here's an idea.
You're right. Today. You're not going to pass this across the editor and get it through to the next round.
In today's society, these are characters that would never happen today for some glaringly obvious reasons, some for, you know, less glaring, but certainly reasons.
Well, and the thing is, it's not even just characters, right? It's situations as well.
Oh, yes, concepts, situations.
Yeah, it's like there's real problematic characters out there. But beyond that, like, the idea of telling a story based around some sort of cultural ideology or some you're trying to invest weight in a story and an idea, and you just don't do it the right way, and somehow they say, you know, whoever's in there says, yeah, mad minute, let's go. you know, sitting behind a desk with a cigar, like, yep, that's the idea. Let's run with that one. Like, no. Oh, man. But, yeah, so two parts, right? The first part, yeah. Some of those characters, some of those situations, which were interesting enough to me, and I think you and I talked about it when we were discussing the concept of this issue that I brought it to you and I said, every single comic book character in some way, shape, or form is problematic. Like, you can, there's, nobody has this kind of, it's like being in a relationship with somebody. You know, if you're in a relationship long enough, there are going to be things that that person does that you're like, I'm not real sure about that, but, but we're in this bad boy for the long haul. And then the second, the flip side of that, you know, the B side to that is characters that they've realized are problematic and realized that the situations are problematic and attempted, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but attempted to fix the problem. And that's sort of what this issue is tonight. It's no fly zone, just stuff that you can't believe. And when you really think about it, you're like, holy shit, how did that make it? And we, and Cole, I don't think that there's a better place to start than the low-hanging fruit of this show. There's two, actually, there's two low, I should say there's two low-hanging fruit of this show. But the real low-hanging fruit.
We do have an orchard that we cull from.
We do.
And so often, the fruit, she hangs low.
And the tallest, strongest of those trees is none other than Bruce Wayne, Batman. possibly the most, and we discussed it in our I think in our psychology issues when we were kind of going through, I need to go back and re-listen to those. Those are really good.
Oh, I know. There's...
I don't often say we need to re-listen to our own stuff, but that's one I kind of want to re-listen to. You could never make that character and not have him be a parody today.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I mean, the whole concept in today's social, especially social, but socially and socio-political climate dictates that you would never, who would take seriously the concept of a one percenter fighting crime at night in a bat suit and essentially funneling a tremendous amount of the family fortune into this ridiculous pursuit?
Yeah, I'm. That's definitely part of it. You know, but more problematic, people have an issue when you buy a pet now instead of adopting one from a shelter. Bruce Wayne picks up stray orphans on the street and then puts them to work in his army of crime fighters. Children! Well,
he's sort of like, you know, if Fagin was good.
I was gonna say he's like a slightly better version of Ice. I'm sure you have a family somewhere. Not anymore. Not anymore, Tim Drake.
Yeah, now you're part of the Batman family.
So Tim Drake had a
it's
dad.
A Batman family?
Wait, you mean Bruce Wayne's family? No, I mean Batman's. Ooh, wait, we have a problem we need to discuss.
Bruce Wayne doesn't have a family. They're all dead.
So, by example, God.
But Batman has a family because Batman got out of the street and made one.
Have you met what my...
Is that a thing? I mean, what is wrong with you?
Have you met my manservant who's also my surrogate family?
That's right.
Whoa, what? He
it's
makes
like a
me
father, dead. An uncle, a brother, and a distant cousin to me.
Platoon mate, he makes me dinner and sews up my bat suit. What?
And sews up my wounds. So, he's exactly like a close cousin that you vacation with, like in Cocoon. Cocoon? Cocoon? We're going to be cousins to vacation together.
Look at the photo album. Whoa. Whoa, buddy. So, you know, he's one of those, and I think we'll get into the fix-em problem, but he's one of the ones I refer to as grandfathered in. If yeah. they were created now, they would never fly. You would never make a Batman book that could ever fly as a new book. You wouldn't see Image, you know, razor line, whatever imprint, Batman, you know.
Dynamite.
Dynamite Batman. Yeah, he's a re-envisioned, oh God, Cole, I just had a horrible thought. How long is it usually until something's open in public domain?
Yeah, it's really kind of weird because a lot of stuff that ought to be on public domain isn't.
Yeah.
And it's because they keep, like, somehow, you know, use the universal language, do re mi, extend those, but, essentially heirs or trusts or any number of other things exist to help preserve your stuff well after your death.
So, like, for instance, you've got, like, the Phantom and the Shadow and, all of these guys that they have, that were public domain, that are being remade into darker, grittier comics, what, 50 or 60 years after the fact? Imagine Batman 100 years from now is public domain, and people start adapting Batman to be darker and grittier than Batman already is. Like, that is an amazing concept to me.
But, wow, I had never really thought about that, but it's both beautiful and frightening.
But he's grandfathered in, because again, there's no way you could possibly take that character now and make it work. Like,
yeah.
Tim Drake being the third Robin, right? The moment the Joker beats Jason Todd to death with a crowbar, the book's canceled now. There's no way that you do that.
Well, especially from an editorial standpoint, where someone suggests that we let the fans decide whether or not he's beaten to death with a crowbar.
Well, we're like three
and
years.
The fans almost universally demand it.
Yeah. Well, we're like 3 years away from there being a phone number you call to decide whether the writer of the comic gets beaten to death with a crowbar the way that these assholes are going.
Mojoverse style.
Damn it. But yeah, Tim Drake, as a
private, they've already got that in the Mojoverse.
As goddamn Mojoverse, as a arcade style, as an example, Tim Drake. So Dick Grayson, I almost forgive. If it would have just been Dick Grayson, you know, and he becomes a ward of the state, and Bruce Wayne adopts him.
It should have just been Dick Grayson.
It should have just been. It shouldn't be a weird, you know, my addiction show on A&E where he's just like, I've got 14 boys in the house. It's like horror.
What? No, that's wrong. No, you never have 14 boys in the house. What are you, some sort of twisted cape Michael Jackson? Or
twisted cape Michael? No, that was Michael Jackson. That's no, he, you
my
know,
cape?
Tim Drake figures out that Bruce Wayne is Batman. Like, that's Tim Drake's claim to fame. He is the best Robin. Like, you know, he's the Robin that chose to be a Robin. What does Batman do? You're in my army now. And Tim's like, but, okay, cool. But I also still have a dad that's alive, lives in Gotham. Nope, you're in my army now.
What's the address?
Yeah, let me go talk to him. I'm rich, and I'm Bruce Wayne. I'm adopting your child, but I'm the child's, like, I'm alive. I'm his legal father. I didn't give him
up. Yeah, I'm his guardian. I don't think I can even... I don't think that's a choice either of us have.
I can't essentially sell you a child right now. Just do that. You're doing it. All right. Like, come on.
I'll talk to the district attorney. That's right. That doesn't matter.
It matters in Gotham.
Yeah, that's not a thing you can do.
Your child is needed. For what, Bruce? Oh, algebra. What? No, that's not algebra. No, it's for algebra. For real, it's for algebra. No. Oh, Batman. Yeah, and that's, I wanted to use Batman as the first example solely because, you know, it's what I refer to as the grandfathered in hero, that it's just been allowed to happen so long that it's almost looked at as cute at this point, but when you really look at it, it's hyper creepy. There's one I wanted to posit to you, Cole, as the second, you know, the other tree at which we hang our hammock from, if one is Batman. The other, and I don't know how, it's problematic, but it's problematic on purpose, and I still will go on record now saying it could never be made today. And I think,
but real quick, before we get out of Batman, I have to point out, indeed, you'll never get out of my army either.
Put on these tights. No, I don't. Put on the tights. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's all right. I don't know why. I kind of enjoyed that in a strange way. Yeah, but the thing about it is you have Bruce Wayne, you know, not only gathering up an army of children in a Dickensian sort of way, you also have, you know, Bruce Wayne, who is a public figure. He's the figurehead of the Wayne Foundation and Wayne Enterprises and Wayne Snacks. And,
yeah, like he's synonymous with Gotham. He's the face of Gotham City.
He's sort of like the ad hoc civilian mayor of Gotham, almost.
Oh, I think that's pretty fair to say. Yeah, absolutely.
So with all of that in mind, then you're left with the burning question of what happens if Ra's al Ghul turns social justice warrior?
Right. Agreed.
Because you expose Bruce Wayne and the lawsuits just keep on coming.
Oh, yeah. No, you're at you are correct,
everybody
sir.
That he ever punched, from Joe Chill straight to the Joker, lining up for the litigation pool.
Tim Drake's dad.
Yeah, the class action on this will.
You're absolutely
like,
right.
Give me the Batmobile and we'll call it quits. It's okay, I'll settle for the Batmobile.
No, you're absolutely right. Like, as problematic as...
You punched my client again.
As problematic as Batman is, I think Bruce Wayne is more problematic. Because it's almost like a weird, you know, Aesop's fable where children in Gotham keep disappearing and they end up in Wayne Manor. Like, what is happening here? Why is this happening?
Why did no one make the connection between the adoption of Dick Grayson and the advent of Robin?
At this point, Dick Grayson's 35 years old and Batman still treats him. You'll always be my boy, Dick. I was never your boy.
I'm not your son. I'm not a Wayne.
Literally was in your mansion for 2 days before you took me into Uncle Touchy's puzzle basement, made me put on a green and fucking red costume, and
really?
Made me walk on a balance beam for 12
put
hours.
Put on these go-go shorts.
These boots have wings. Oh, I don't want to wear them. Oh, you're wearing them. You're mine now.
Super wings.
Who's like, oh, cool. You know, like which kid outside of
as an acrobat, he's accustomed to outlandish costumes, but it doesn't mean he wants to wear it every night. Well, yes, he kind of did wear it every night in the.
Yeah, how is that not traumatic? By the way, hold on, back it up. Let's put it in reverse. I can do this entire issue on Batman. How is it not traumatic a month after you're wearing your high-flying Grayson's leotard, and so are your family when they fall to their death? How traumatic is it that a month later, Batman is in the Batcave and says, put on this leotard? It's like, what? That's horrible. That's horrible. Oh, my God. All right, moving on. We got more stuff we got to
cover.
We got
a lot of ground to cover.
Right. So, a comic that could never be made today, but was made... And I think was made sort of on – it was obviously made on purpose this way, but I don't even think if you were trying to sell it as social commentary or satire you could, is Watchmen. I don't think you could do it now, period.
Yeah. It was in many ways a hard sell, and oddly enough, it almost wasn't, because the original intention was that Alan Moore was going to bring help bring those Charlton characters into the fore. And then they're like, you didn't leave us much to work with after this.
Nobody's coming back from this. Nobody's coming back. But the themes in it, I don't think you could take this to DC or Marvel or Valiant or Image now and drop it on somebody's desk and say, I want to make this.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's going to agree to anything outside of maybe two or three characters are like, yep, comedian, got to cut the comedian. Any of those flashbacks, gots to go.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Manhattan's dick, probably we're going to cut that. Oh, we're going to film it from the waist up. Nobody's getting that.
Yeah, we can suggest that he's got the classic penile area.
But yeah, I just don't feel like that's a book, and I know that we're treading on hallowed ground for both of us.
Yeah.
But if Alan Moore was 32 or however old he was when he made this thing, I don't believe that any modern creator that walked up with this manuscript and dropped it on a desk and said, "We're making this," would ever be able to make it.
And it was, even when it was made, it almost is suggestive of this was made because it was Alan Moore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's true. When you're Alan Moore at that period, after V for Vendetta, after everything that he did, at that point, he kind of could write his own check.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways that was to the detriment of DC, that they said you can write your own check. As much as I love Watchmen, and it's seminal, and it's perfect, and no one should ever touch it, it didn't do DC any favors besides being Watchmen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, here's this. It's self-contained. It is what it is. It'll exist forever. People will constantly buy copies of it. But we're never going to be able to do anything with it, and every time we try, it's going to be like a monkey's paw that just drags itself down into the depths of the ocean. All right, we'll go with it. Yeah, Watchmen, I know it's sacred ground, but I really believe that that's true. You know, I
think it probably would have been a hard sell for anyone else, and ultimately becomes a... you know, I think that you're on the right track there, that it would be impossible to pitch today.
Yeah, I agree. So that's two from me. What do you got, my man? What do you got to
bring?
Well,
you know, I got to thinking about some characters. I want to lead in with a character who got missed out when we were doing our the Diet Coke of Evil.
Uh-oh.
Our cover boy... I somehow completely and totally forgot to so much as mention in the course of the episode. And to probably not so much to do reverence to it because, well, you know, frankly, this isn't going to be doing this character any favors in any way. But I did want to at least acknowledge this character, and this was the perfect venue to pick right back up again almost immediately after. And that is none other than Arnim Zola.
Ah, yes. Arnim Zola.
Because as characters go, I want to give you a glimpse into how far mad science can go.
Okay.
So people are like, you know, they're going to be on board with that. I like the mad scientist. That's a staple of comics. That's something we've become accustomed to and like, well, we're gone.
No, no, he's back. It's been a while.
Pastor Oakfist was speaking with Arnim Zola last week about how mad scientists can be. I realize I'm talking to a guy with a television for a chest. But,
right.
You know, Arnim Zola... presents as the, you know, the progenitor of the flat screen television.
Sure, sure.
But when you determine that you're going to preserve your consciousness for all eternity in an artificial form and to basically translate all that you are into a robotic body.
Yes.
The choices are endless. It becomes like 10 fins on C-Lab 2021, you know. I've got the strength of 10 gorillas.
I've got the strength of a bear that has the strength of 2 bears.
I want to be an Adrian Barbeau-bot.
I just watched a movie with Adrian Barbeau in it. Oh, wow. And all I could think of was Adrian Barbeau-bot. I couldn't even enjoy the movie.
You know, back in the day, Adrian Barbeau was... and Barbie is. Benton? Huh? Lest we forget Barbie Benton. But, you know, to illustrate, the variety. Wasn't there like a TV commercial years ago where like every robot and android in popular culture converged on some automobile or ice cream or bow tie or something? I don't remember what it was.
I'm sure there was, yes.
It's very clever kind of thing. And so, you know, but even within the context of the Marvel Universe, there are tons and tons of kick-ass robots. I mean, there are bound to have been 16 or 17 spider slayers laying around. You could just mix and match.
Sure, yeah.
And what do you choose but a vermilion corduroy and purple outfit with, you know, the puffy shirt from Seinfeld?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then outfit this with a chest plate with an extreme close-up of your face.
Just right there.
Yeah, just what an egomaniac. And then in lieu of a head, just to illustrate what a narcissist this man was, it's like, my eyes are down here, mister. Because he just has this little tiny, you know, snack-sized mother box for a head.
He really does. He really does. It's just, like, that's an odd choice to me.
Yeah, to go and say, you know, hey, I've got a great villain for some of our more iconic characters.
Yeah, your Captain America's, your, yeah, absolutely.
Your Avengers. I've got a character that is going to be their enduring nemesis. What have you got? No, seriously, what have you got?
Well, the part about it that cracks me up is the functionality was there to have an actual head and probably
yes.
have a computer or, you know, a monitor on your head.
Yeah, you could just have like a head-shaped head with your face on the head-shaped head.
Right.
But no.
No, you did not. No,
that's not the route we're taking.
We're not doing that. We are going to do this weird shit, and you're going to like it.
So I think you would have a hard time suggesting that this was a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Selling it would be very difficult. Selling it would be very difficult. I agree with that wholeheartedly. So what else? We got Arnim Zola. So we got Batman, the Watchman, Arnim Zola. I mean, I have one situation, one theme that's touchy that I do want to get to before we start getting to the fix-em-ups.
Yeah. Well, I've got a couple others just
right,
from
off.
The standpoint of thinking through the whole idea of you'd have a hard time selling these guys today.
Right.
And, you know, and I think this one is one that obviously suffers from its age, as one does.
Sure.
In situations like this. And that is, of course, and here I may be treading some dangerous ground.
That's okay. That's what we're here for.
But I'm looking at the original Green Lantern.
You're looking at the original Green Lantern.
Yeah, Alan Scott.
Okay.
Because for one thing, has there been a new original brand spanking out of nowhere magic guy in comics? Are we even still doing magic anymore? I'm kind of curious about that.
We may well be. We are. It's just not as... Again, they've kind of tried to fix them up, right? So you've got... what's her name? You got the Runaways fix them up.
With the
Nico
the stick.
Yeah, we've got a few in the Doctor Strange.
Yeah, Nicki Minaj.
Damn it. We got a few in the Doctor Strange kind of quadrant of the world that are kind of new and upcoming. Brother Voodoo got his stint. I know he's not particularly new, but, you know, he never got much play.
He did kind of get revived.
Yeah, they're still out there fighting the good fight, I think. Just not as much. So continue. I'm sorry. Continue.
Oh, no, that's all right. But if you wanted to, like, say, hey, let's bring magic back into the fore. You know, let's make magic magical again. Let's do something with that.
Right.
And like, okay, yeah, I'm with you. I like it. I'm ready. I want to be a part of this. I think it's something. What do you have in mind? Well, I got in mind a superhero who has a magic ring that will let him use his mind, his imagination, what have you, to create whatever he needs. Like if, you know, there's a great big redwood in the middle of the road, he can just make a giant buzzsaw and cut it all up. And then make a steam shovel to get it out of the way, and the traffic can go for it. Okay, a little rudimentary, but I see where you're going. See, like swords and shields and what have you, and pretty much anything. Yeah, exactly. But this incredible power is limited. Okay, well, you know, we all, you know, kids want the limiters. You know,
you got to make it interesting.
Yeah, you got to have some vulnerability there, as they say. Yes, and his vulnerability, his weakness, his kryptonite, if you will.
Yes.
Wood. Are you with me? Wood, like anything that's made out of wood. So if your superhero with the ring got into a fight with, I don't know, a villain at Home Depot, he'd have to be praying that they don't go into the lumber section. Is that where we are with this? Like a big piece of baloney board could just take him out?
Baloney board. Good. That's good. All right. Keep.
and I've got one other that I think would be a hard sell today. And with this one, you have to effectively divorce yourself from everything that's happened in the last 10 years.
Okay.
Because this character in the last 10 years was in a unique position of being a highly unlikely choice to invest in for the big screen.
All right.
And yet was pulled off with amazing aplomb. And that, of course, is going to color opinions on viability. Because they're like, well, no, you know, there's plenty of proof of concept. I mean, even 50, 60 years ago, it was probably a hard sell. But, you know, we know it's workable. It's good. But I think that if you just divorce yourself of all the reality of this character and just let this character be like something brand new. Nobody's ever thought of this before.
Okay.
I've got this great idea for a new superhero, and it taps into mythology.
Okay.
And I'm like, hey, mythology is good. You know, there's all kinds of stuff. People have done wonders, and it's free. That's right. And you think of that song about the land of ice and snow, and you bring in the character of their god of thunder of the ancient Norse people, the Vikings.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know who the ancient Norse people are. Yeah, but you get them. Okay, and like their god of thunder, Thor, is real, and he comes to Earth to fight crime.
Straight crime.
Yeah, and to fight, to defeat his enemies with the power of thunder and lightning and his hammer, But wait, there's it gets better. He can only come to Earth to fight crime with Mr. Mittenhattan if there's like a medical doctor.
It has to be a medical doctor, though.
Yeah. He's like, that way, you know, in case of trouble, you got a doctor on hand.
Sure.
Is so proud, he uses just this gnarliest ass stick he can find to hobble around on because he's got a gammy leg. And all of a sudden, he's been chosen. And if he strikes that gnarly cane down on the ground, then Thor takes him over. Just like Billy Batson.
Yes. I never thought about how gnarly that cane was, though.
Yeah, I was like, what's up, Don? Come on. You're a doctor. You can afford a better piece of stick than that.
Like, that's kind of pathetic. So, yeah. You're absolutely... Yeah, that's a good sell. But like I said, anyone... Like, I challenge you to present me with a character that isn't problematic from the beginning. I thought long and hard about this. Superman's hard to touch. You know, Superman's hard to touch. Spider-Man's hard to touch. Captain America's hard to touch. Those are the ones that would, you know, that would be considered, I think those are the ones you can't touch. But there are, basically anyone else is kind of open for looking at this in such a way as to say, there's some rough points there. There's some rough edges that are going to need to be smoothed out if this is going to work. So I did want to talk about the one situation that came up time and time again when I was doing research for this and sort of what was the impetus for this whole episode. This whole issue was way back in the Wayback Machine. I guess it wasn't even that...
Really, Shaman?
Yeah, right? I guess it wasn't even that far back. I'm trying to see when it was that it was released. I know it was the 80s, and it goes back. I have a point of reference prior to the 80s, and that's the concept. And I'm going to say this, and it's not my concept. All right, I didn't do it, and that's the concept of blackface in comic books.
Yes,
blackface in comic books is a thing that would happen fairly regularly. And I just... So, the first reference I could find to it was Lois Lane, of all people.
Yeah.
So, if you didn't know, and I think maybe we touched on this in an issue a while ago, Lois Lane needs to go undercover to get a story. So, she goes into a machine that turns her black.
Provided by Superman, no less. The Kryptonian race change machine. Apparently, you know, Dad packed a lot of crap into that rocket.
Yeah, no. I got this. No, I got one. I got one. It's right here. It's... Why do you have that?
Why was that ever a thing? Why did someone go to the trouble to arrive at that technology?
Who was that for? But... Lois Lane goes into blackface to get an inside story in a Metropolis neighborhood called Little Africa.
Oh yeah, because we weren't bad enough already.
Right. And the whole point of this is to show you how the treatment and the life in the ghetto at the time. Like, that's the whole point, right? Which is bad. Like, the inherent white supremacy in everyone, the systemic racism, you know, what we see and then what we experience is a whole nother, you know, there are books that did write by this, like O'Neill and Adams, Green Lantern, Green Arrow run. We talked about that. You know, a lot of the Heroes for Hire stuff, it is solid. But the other one, oh God, this one I know we've talked about. 1992, Punisher gets into a firefight, gets cut up real bad, needs to go undercover to hide from his attackers, goes undercover by going to I guess he was a plastic surgeon. They had some pretty high-end plastic surgery.
I think he was, like, cosplaying as Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, from Tropic Thunder?
Tropic Thunder.
Goes...
On the Punisher, pretending to be the other Punisher.
Goes black, for lack of a better term, to become... For his disguise.
Yeah.
And then proceeds to, you know... God, it just sucks. It just sucks. It's hard to even talk about what happened, not to mention the Beyonder.
Yes, we talked about that, just where he spontaneously goes from being a white 80s era Michael Jackson, because he's dressed in the same sort of kind of outfit that was that era. But he goes, not only does he effectively change from this, from his like long curls and his white boy look, to he basically just does a complete race change rather spontaneously for the benefit of Power Man and Iron Fist. And to make matters even worse, then a couple of genuine African-American dudes get offended, and with the most amazing suspension of disbelief, apparently disgust trumps disbelief.
Yes. Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
I mean, granted, they live in a world chock-a-block full of superheroes and weird-ass shit going on all the time.
Right. Constantly.
But plus, you know, the thing about it is, in all fairness, they were kind of horning in on Power Man and Iron Fist discussion.
Well, sure. Yeah, that's a problem.
I mean, it does not dismiss what the Beyonder did, but, I mean, you know, what's a brother to do when he's from out of town?
Well, so what they're trying to do with these stories that they're telling in blackface is show you the tribulations and the racism and what the world looks like through that.
Yes, and in fact, you know, Lois Lane is trying to get an inside look as someone on the inside by virtue of the fact that she's constantly referred to from images I've seen of some of the panels as Whitey.
She is referred to as Whitey.
So as Whitey, she's never going to have an opportunity to really get an in-depth, up close and personal, you know, an opportunity to really get to know anyone and figure out what is it like to actually be.
Right. To experience.
To experience racism as someone within that race, even if just for a day.
So my problem with this is all of these problems, all of this, the nature of the problematics of this are solved by introducing characters of color that are well fleshed out. And can go and can do these, can tell these stories for you. You don't have to take the Punisher and make him a black guy. You don't have to take Lois Lane and make her a black woman. You can create
Here's an idea. Have a journalist who's black.
Yeah, shocking.
Go into the street, into the hood, and
tell your story.
And find out, you know, what is it really like on the ground floor of things like this. And,
tell your story.
The like, big issues.
So in there are ways that I would say probably where that is one of those things as we move out of this and into the, you know, the we tried to fix it realm, you know, that is one of the things that we've realized now is when we're trying to tell a story from a certain perspective, we can tell that story with a character. We don't have to shoehorn and create Jim Shooter's Punisher in blackface. Which is just ridiculous. By the way, it was Jim Shooter. nobody shocked at all. You don't have to do that. We can create characters of color and have them in interesting and poignant situations. It doesn't have to be Whitey all the time. We got this. Like dumb, just dumb. And I'm glad that they've. More or less, I guess I'll call more or less fixed, you know?
Yeah.
So do you have anything that pops into your head when it comes to, characters with backstories that might be problematic that they've gone into now and attempted to fix for better or worse?
Off the top of my head, not so much that, but one of the things I do love is where they take the Hall of Shame and bring them back into the light in unique new ways.
Okay. I like
and I
that.
Guess, in a way, on the racism issue, we talked a bit about Egg Foo.
Ah, see, that was one I was thinking about bringing up. Go right ahead.
I was really surprised. Was it during like the various crises?
It was the lead up to the new. It was the 52.
Oh, that's right. It was the 52. They bring in this character. I'm like, oh my god, is that the remake of Egg Foo? So in a way, I guess I did have one that was a very problematic character with the Fu Manchu Easter egg being redone as sort of like, you know, spider carriage Humpty Dumpty.
Right. I agree. Carriage Humpty Dumpty. Kenneth Branagh from Wild
Dr.
West.
Loveless.
Yeah, meets Humpty Dumpty for sure. Yeah.
I mean, granted, he it did have a kind of duck egg patina to the shell, but still, it wasn't just blatant. You know, no evil mustache, no Sax Roamer ripoff.
Oh, man, that's a good one. I have one for you that they failed at, okay? And this is going to hurt, Cole, so just prepare yourself. You're going to feel this one. The pages of Alpha Flight are replete with characters who one would say is problematic because John Byrne, in and of himself and his creation of characters, can absolutely be problematic. Look no further than, what was her name? Was it Pink Pearl?
Well,
was it
Pink? Pink Pearl. In fact, Alpha Flight brought us such problematic characters as Pink Pearl, Deadly Earnest.
Right.
And, what was the, there was one other that really stuck out. Oh, Gilded Lily.
Yes.
And during his run on The Thing, he brought in Good Detitius,
right,
who should have been on the last issue.
But my whole thing here is this. There's one character that doesn't get talked about a whole lot from Alpha Flight that I think needs to be talked about, and that's the diminutive pugilist known as Puck.
Ah, Puck.
So, it's very hard to sell a little person acrobat as a superhero in the modern day and age.
Not only that, a little person acrobat and former boxer.
Yes. So, in order to course correct this, because they knew that it wasn't going to fly, they reinvented him as an ancient genie. Yes, an ancient genie that took the form of Puck, that's immortal and would be born again and again in the, it's awful, because they just could not allow him just to be Puck, which is, in my opinion, horrible. That's bad. Are there any like that jump into your head and make you say,
it's funny, though, because, you know, Alpha Flight constantly suffered from unnecessary reinvention.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, the whole burn-driven garbage, frankly, with Aurora just spontaneously going nuts and cutting her hair in some sort of weird fashion show style and
just losing her mind, more or less.
Yeah, just going completely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And the aforementioned thing with Puck, and then at intervals, it seemed like there was this constant need. Aurora and Northstar, it couldn't be enough that they were separated twin mutants. You know, one raised in a convent, one cheating his way to Olympic gold and Canuckies or whatever they call Wheaties in Canada. But then they come together and find out they have a companion kind of power as well on top of everything else. Now, that's not good enough.
No.
He has to turn gay and she has to go nuts. And if that's not good enough, how else can we just completely destroy these characters with abject disregard?
Yes.
And of course, what better thing to do than suddenly, they were never mutants in the first place. They were the fairy children of
the elves, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't think that's no. It is. They're elves.
Elfie and JoJo from Munchkinland. They never were.
No. And then they had to correct that. On top of that. And then they were like, no, they're not even elves anymore. Now they're back to being mutants. Like, what? Just guys, get it together. Oh, my God. No, and there are so many like that they've tried to fix that were so. Another one is Hank Pym. So much of this was okay. Here's here's where I want to end it, right? Because we're getting a little long in the tooth, and we got to end it anyway. Let's say you have a long-running history of problematic characters, characters that have either jacked-up backstories that you, so much continuity you can't figure out, or you know, characters that have done things in the past during a time period, you know, in which we will refer to as the time of Mad Men. Your Hank Pyms, your Reed Richards, your, you know, you name it. Marvel decided, hey, here's what we'll do. You know that big war we had back when everybody was an asshole and beat their wives and demanded to get sandwiches and would rather work on their and would rather work on their ultimate nullifiers than spend any time with their families? You remember those times? Yeah, remember that big war we had with, was it the Kree and the, what was it? It was the Skrull.
Oh, the Skrull. Yeah. Can't they change shape and be whatever they want to be?
Yeah, so here's...
Just like people on, what was that website where you'd have your avatar and you could go wander around and...
Second Life?
Second Life, yeah. They're...
This is the first ever Second Life reference in any podcast ever.
You will never know. I'm like the Trevor of podcasting. You just, when it comes to things popping out of your mind, you'll never see it coming.
So thank you. Not problematic, by the way. Perfect. Sir Ben Kingsley as Mandarin was perfect. I'll fight you in an alley later. I don't give a shit. So they had this invasion, secret invasion, where they released this or they revealed this idea that for the past 30 years or 40 years, a great number of your favorite characters weren't themselves at all. They were Skrulls. Hank Pym beat his wife? No, he didn't. Skrull did it. Whatever was out of character for that character to do for the time in which he lives in now, Skrull did it.
They could, yeah, just retrofit. Turns out it wasn't J. Jonah Jameson who we called out like crazy.
Skrull did
it. At the end, it was Skrull Jameson.
It was Skrull Jameson.
Who had all those spider slayers.
Yeah, Skrull Jameson. Remember...
and so I guess we're technically everybody who got, you know, scrolled over...
Nice.
Were they all just like in stasis somewhere?
Yes.
Or,
yeah.
I mean, and why did the Skrulls just kill them?
And then a spaceship lands, and all of the regular, you know, heroes get off of the spaceship because they've been in like a weird reverie for 3 decades, and then they all fight, and everybody's happy, and we can forget about all the horrible things that they did in the past, like, you know, just anything, any imaginable
yeah.
thing that they did that was bad or wrong, we can write away now because Skrulls did it. We can
yeah,
rewrite
turns
it.
Turns out, yeah, nobody ever did anything to anybody, but the Skrulls.
Those bastards.
They'll be hell to pay.
Still think it was a pretty solid event, but that happened, and then I was like, oh, this is dumb. All right. I think we did some justice here. I enjoyed this. This was fun. There were still characters.
This was good.
We could have gone through literally every comic book character.
Oh, absolutely.
Much. But, you know, why do that when you have Batman? That's what I always say. All right, Cole, why don't you plug us up and we'll work on getting out of here. And, you know, we got more show. 20? God damn, Cole. 20 more.
I know.
20 more till Big 300.
It's getting dangerously close, man.
I know. Who'd have thunk it? We didn't even talk about how problematic Moon Knight is, but Moon Knight's super problematic.
Oh, yeah.
Just super, super bad. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Plug us up. We'll get out of here. I'm looking around my office, and everything I see is a problematic superhero.
Well, yeah, there's literally no shortage of characters that you're like,
Tony
huh?
Stark? What?
Makes you feel.
What? All right. I'm shutting up now. Go ahead and plug us up.
Shutting up, sir. This is, of course, a production of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. And you can write to us at JCUMail@Yahoo.com. You can also, if you are at all enjoying any of this and are intrigued by what else I might be up to, you can always check out the Rancor pit. Actually, the Rancor pit here on the Jedi Cult Universe, which just hit 75 episodes. Ooh. And the Rancor pit live, which on the first Sunday of August, rather, will be hitting the milestone 100th episode. 100 episodes of the live show have been produced with myself and Eddie Medina over at DallasOnAir.com. And I think coming up also in August is the 12th or 13th episode of my new show, Isle of Toys, which is a monthly. And, of course, Rancor Pit is the first and third Sundays of every month. Isle of Toys on the third Sunday of every month from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central. Rancor Pit, first and third Sundays from 10:30 to 11:30 Central at DallasOnAir.com. So be sure and check that out. And we'll likely be making an appearance at some conventions coming up throughout the year.
That's fantastic, man. Yeah, and you can find us on the social medias at HK Comics Show. Thank you, guys. We wouldn't be doing this without you guys. We really appreciate all of the interaction, everybody out there, you know, coming to the shows, watching the live shows, coming to the cons, listening to what we got going on. We wouldn't be doing it without you. So with all that being said, say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody. And wherever possible, go with the better version.
I couldn't say it better myself. Good night, everybody.